Hello there and a very warm welcome to the official EFL podcast. Joining me this week is a former Seasider turned leader of the COD Army. Charlie Adam is the new Fleetwood boss, but still found time to chat.
I've got good players. For whatever reason, fitness-wise, form, confidence, it's been low. So I have to try and change that within. So, you know, I'm not a manager that's coming in January looking to bring in six or seven, move six or seven out. The squad is a little bit big. I will have to move players on. There's no doubt about that because it's too big for what I want to work with. But bringing players in the building, you know, there won't be many because I believe there's a good squad here. And I think with the players and the work that we can do, we can win football matches.
Former Beeb and now Sky Sports colleague of mine, Juliet Ferrington, has become our first signing of the January window. She debuts as co-host. And this week's 72 in 72 guest slash victim is Barrow boss Pete Wild. This is, of course, the official EFL podcast. Right, we've a new and very welcome face joining our co-host stable in 2024 years of experience across the Beeb, grilling the great and the good of the sporting world, and now a vital part of our coverage at Sky Sports. It's a proper journalist, thankfully, right here on the official EFL podcast in the shape of Juliet Ferrington. Jules, a very warm welcome.
Thank you. You all right? What's happening?
From having to reintroduce you several times and redo this intro several times, I think we're absolutely flying. So looking forward to having you aboard. A bit of professionalism for you all listening, wherever you're listening to this. And our special guest this week has taken the plunge and joined the managerial madhouse, taking his bow not too far from where his Premier League playing career really took flight. It's new Fleetwood Town boss, Charlie Adam. Charlie, hello.
Hello. Are you okay?
I'm really well. I'm really well, my friend. Thank you so much for joining us. A week in and two games down. How does it feel to be in the dugout at the touchline? It sounds like a very, very busy start to this current job that you've got.
Yeah, it is. Listen, it's everything I expected. A couple of cold sores, a bit of a cold, run down. But I wouldn't change it. I'm loving every single minute of it. I'm 10 days in now. But I'm very fortunate enough I've been given this opportunity because, you know, this is what you work hard for as an academy coach or a young coach coming into the game. You want to step on your own mantle, and I'm lucky enough that I've been given this opportunity at a club that I know well. I live near the area, which has helped. I was been here nearly 15 years as a player and, you know, based in Blackpool. So, again, know a lot going about the club. So I have that little bit of insight to what's been going on and how the club's run. So, yeah, no, really privileged and honoured. And hopefully we can start picking up a couple of results.
Great thing about the podcast, Jules, is the fact that I bring people together that haven't seen each other for ages. However, with you and Charlie, it's been, what, 2 or 3 days?
Two or three days. And I also worked with Charlie at the start of the season. We did a game at Bramall Lane, Sheffield United against Everton. And I just vividly remember this because, Charlie, you'd done a game with Burnley under 21s. I think you were playing away at Colchester or something like that, far away. Yeah. I remember you telling me you got in at 4 or 5 in the morning. You got collected at 8. You then went to Sheffield to join me. We did the game together against Everton, 2-2. You were then going to Doncaster because you had a player from Burnley on loan at Doncaster, and you were going to watch him play before you were getting home back up north that night. So I was just wondering, how much sleep have you had as a manager?
Not much. But again, it's everything as a manager comes to your door. But again, that was me. That's the way I want to work. I want to be invested in everything I do. I want to give everything. And like I said, you know, there'll be opportunities when you're out of work or it's the holidays. That's the time you can rest. But when you're in, you're in. And it's been a manic 10 days, but, you know, real learning curve. And, you know, when the chef needs to know what time the food's at because the training needs to be put back or come forward, that's things that's not really coachable on your licenses. But again, when you've got good people and good staff around you, the support, and that's been amazing. I just keep looking forward to the next day, getting up, and, you know, I'm looking forward to what the next challenge is going to be.
Charlie, who do you run this type of decision by before you actually take the job? You strike me as a man that's very kind of driven, ambitious, knows where he wants to go. Is there anyone that you would bounce this off? Is there a committee of people, perhaps, that you would bounce this off, given how much the job really does entail?
Well, I don't want to throw, but I will, you know, I have a good relationship with David Moyes. somebody that my agent is his brother, so I've known David for a long, long time, somebody I trust, and I have people that I would use. I don't have any problems picking up the phone to managers or former people, because that's the way I want to be. I want to have a relationship with people, and ultimately, if you have a relationship with these types of people, you know, because they've been there, they've seen it and done it. David gave me great advice, the reasons to take a job, not to take a job. But again, ultimately, you have to make the own decision on your own. So I would say somebody like a David Moyes, you know, old managers I've had, an Ian Holloway, people like that that I've worked with, would bounce things off. So I've got a lot of support out with the game that I can rely and pick the phone up to. And yeah, it's just having that moment and that time that I will eventually speak to the people that are going to really benefit and help me going forward, and hopefully be part of a journey that is going to be successful over the years to come.
What was the biggest reason for taking the job then, after having spoken to the likes of David Moyes and Ian Holloway? What kind of reason did they give you to pursue this career?
Well, Julia, I always wanted to be a number one. I was really intrigued as a player about coaching and management, why, what decisions were made, the reasons for it. Tactics were massive for me. And, you know, I've reached out to a lot of managers over the last couple of years to maybe get advice or go and meet them to have a chat in terms of what their expectations are or their experiences they've had as a manager. And ultimately, a lot of them are saying, just be yourself. Be what you think is right for you. Don't change. Be a good human being, because you'll get rewarded with that. And it's important that these players feel loved. You know, me and Prutz, as a player, you want to be loved. And if you give that back, then these lads will run through brick walls for you. And at the moment, I've managed to get a good reaction from the players, and hopefully that can continue. But I keep saying it, I have to win football matches. That's the drive, that's the excitement about setting your team up in the week and then ultimately trying to win a game at the weekend.
We were just chatting just before we came on, weren't we? And you've already been on several Zoom calls this morning and had a couple of meetings looking at staff, looking at players. The vibe that I got after listening to you talk to Juliet at the weekend was the need for Fleetwood to be better in both boxes. So presumably whoever you've been speaking to would help with that moving forward.
Yes, it will be. Again, but, you know, we are bottom of the league. We've conceded the most goals. And that's an issue. I have to fix that with the staff in the next couple of days in training, and that's what we've been working on. You'll see, I had come in with the grand idea and the philosophy or the way of playing that we want to play. But ultimately, when you get in a building, you see different things. You see a squad. I wanted to try and come in and play 4-3-3, different formations. But again, this group of players needs something else, so I have to adapt to that. And that's just having the right people around you to say, hold on a minute, this is not going to work if we want to do this way, so we have to go another way. But the players have bought in everything we've done. And like I say, I just hope that the work that we're doing, the results will come, and I believe that they will, because we've got good players. I've got a good squad here that was recruited well, and hopefully we can add a couple from now to the end of the window that will improve us, and ultimately we can win a few games and push up the league. Julia, I just obviously come off a Zoom call, and I said to the player that, you know, I'm only looking to try and bring, you know, 1, 2, maximum 3 players in this window, and I'm bottom of the league. So what does that say? I say that I believe in this group of players that I have. I've got good players. For whatever reason, fitness-wise, form, confidence, it's been low. So I have to try and change that within. So, you know, I'm not a manager that's coming in January looking to bring in 6 or 7, move 6 or 7 out. The squad is a little bit big. I will have to move players on. There's no doubt about that, because it's too big for what I want to work with. But bringing players in the building, you know, there won't be many, because I believe there's a good squad here, and I think with the players and the work that we could do, we can win football matches.
Jules, given your experience of the match day tunnel area, which, as we know, is a hive of activity, it's a kind of a sacred place, and having worked with footballers who become pundits who become managers, coaches, etc., give me your unique take on how different you can find these wonderful people in these different situations.
when you mean you're when you're speaking to the Derby County manager who's just won at Fleetwood Town, and Fleetwood put in a really strong performance at the start of the game. At the end of the game, they could have got a point out of it, snatched that point out of it, and they played really well. And you're standing next to Charlie and you're trying to make polite conversation and there's absolutely nothing because all Charlie's looking at is at the end of the tunnel, knowing that he's got an interview to do. But Charlie, I try and put myself in your position, because your head must be full of what's just happened, and you've got to try and articulate that straight afterwards and in front of camera.
Yeah, but and I think about that as well is you have to have a moment after the game. You could be emotional. You could say, I've got somebody within the club that who I know that will pull me to the side to reconnect me with what's actually going on, what's happened. And then you become a better person going into that interview, because you can say things through emotion and things like that. But again, I want to be that one stood at the end of the tunnel, being able to have a smile on my face, like Paul Warren did with Prutz at the weekend. But again, that comes with winning football matches. He's in a good run of form. He's got a good squad of players. But that will come in terms of what the work that we do. We will win football matches. I do believe that. But, you know, it's just taking that moment to reevaluate what's going on. And then you give a better interview. So it's just taking time sometimes and listening to what actually has been said. But like, again, about Paul, was he was really real great guy in terms of what he got. You know, his beliefs are that he's open, he's honest. He says it how it is. I've met him a couple of times at games. And, another guy that on part of my journey, you know, no doubt I'll share a few phone calls because, you know, the way he speaks and the honesty and openness is key to what you want to be as a manager.
So just saying that, do you watch how other managers, players perform? Because it is a performance in front of camera to a point. And how they can also behave and things to say and not to say, because in post-match environments, very few managers give little away to how they are actually feeling inside emotionally. Maybe anger, frustration. It's just how you behave in front.
Yeah, absolutely. Your behaviour. And I'm going to use that. I think my experience in terms of some of the media work that I've done is going to help me in the longer term, in terms of standing there, taking a deep breath, realising what I can and can't say, what I feel. Because ultimately, when you're on the outside and a manager makes a big comment or a thing, everybody says, oh, why did he say that? So it's just knowing what you can say, when you can say it. And using my experiences of being in the media in terms of, you know, being on the radio and some of the TV bits as well. So, no, it's important that people get a good raw emotion as well, because you want to feel it. You have to feel it. You have to be able to express it. But you have to do it in the right way. And ultimately, you know, if you're calm, then that leads to your group being calm in certain situations as well.
And given where you do find yourselves, Charlie, as you mentioned, positionally in the league, there is work to be done. I mean, that's an understatement, of course. But given the points that are on offer, given the points that are there to get you somewhere near safety, there must be a belief in that from your point of view as the manager coming in, that this absolutely is attainable, because we have just literally turned halfway through the season into the second half. There's so many games left, isn't there? I mean, and how wary of you that you can look at that and you've got a big stretch of games out thinking we've got a lot of work to do, but we've got a lot of time to get safe before suddenly, bang, it's Easter. It's almost the end of the season. Are you conscious of time flying?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm two games in within 8-10 days. So there's enough games. There's plenty of points to be played for, but it will catch up on you. You know, when you get to that Easter period, back-to-back games, January is a little bit different because we don't have any midweek games, which has been good for me in terms of getting on the grass with the players, getting real good information into them. But come February, we've got two or three midweek games. So you can quickly turn the negatives into a positive and get back-to-back wins if you can, and then build momentum. And then the points become small margins every week. Gaining points every week will really help us. At the moment, we're not gaining enough points. But with the weeks to come, hopefully that will change. And the league is so tight in terms of where we're at and where the teams above us are. And a couple of results could change everything.
you've obviously got a very good relationship with Vincent Kompany as well, part of the coaching setup at Burnley. What kind of words did he say to you as you sort of your parting sort of words or advice that he gave you when you were moving up the road?
Welcome to the madness, he said. But no,
don't do it, he said.
Well, you've seen what he's going through as well, haven't you? You've seen how he did so well, and now we're in the Premier League. It's just light and day.
Yeah, the gap is massive. You know, from the Premier League is on another stratosphere in terms of the quality of the players, the punishment that you can get with any mistake, you can get punished. But for him, what I take from him is his leadership, his quality is incredible. His understanding of people, not just the players, but the staff, and the way he has an aura about him in terms of how he goes around the place. Real humbleness as well, which is incredible. So his daily work is something that I've seen for now 2 years. It's been brilliant. And I see the development of the players, the club, moving forward. But again, ultimately, it comes down to results. They had a three-year plan. They're probably 2 years ahead of plan. It went really quick for them to get into the Premier League. And ultimately, with the way they played, they deserve to be in the Premier League. So now he's really open in terms of, you know, if I need any calls. He's in a difficult situation himself, but you know, I will lean on him. I'll lean on his staff as well, and I will use them to try and get little bits from them to really help my players going forward.
Charlie, you must have one heck of a contacts book, and people to call upon if you need help or players or anything like that.
Yeah, and I think that's important. That you know, I'm new into management, and there's a lot of people that I've got lots of experience, and you can use that, because ultimately, again, there is only, what is it, 92 of us in the leagues that are in a full time job. It's difficult, you know, and there's lots of managers out of work, very good managers out of work. So when you're in it, you have to try and use as much of your contacts, your experiences, not be afraid to pick the phone up. I think that's probably one of the biggest things. A lot of managers will think, oh, well, I'm not too sure he'll answer or pick the phone up. I think you've got to use that, and if you have good people around you that could support you, it's key and valuable for going forward as a young coach.
Well, Charlie, I mean, you've been a superstar, mate. I know you're very, very busy. You're probably going to get off this call and then make several more to make sure that things are bubbling along for the weekend. So much respect for you, for men that have been there, done it, and want to give something back instead of being sat on a sofa with me pulling people apart. But punditry is obviously dead serious as well. But no, we just wish you all the very, very best with it, mate, and we're going to keep a keen eye.
Thank you very much.
Charlie there, wonderful addition to the podcast. Jules, have a half-time orange, because in a minute we're going to go again in the words of Stephen Gerrard. And for you, dear listeners / watchers, here's Barra boss Pete Wild taking out on our simply titled but devastatingly difficult 72-72.
Hi, I'm Pete Wild, and this is my 72-72. Accrington, Bolton, Bradford, Bristol City, Bristol Rovers, Barrow, Cardiff, Coventry, Colchester, Doncaster, Grimsby, Gillingham, Huddersfield, Harrogate, Ipswich, Middlesbrough, Millwall, Norwich, Oxford, Peterborough, Queen's Park Rangers, Rotherham, Stockport, Wrexham, Wimbledon, Sutton. I'm just going to try and go through the leagues now. Preston North End, Blackpool, Forest Green Rovers. That went really quick.
Barrow boss Pete Wild there scoring a very respectable 29, which puts him number three with a bullet on our leaderboard. Matt Smith at the top, Richie Wellins, the aforementioned Pete Wild, Wayne Rooney, Ebu Adams, John Coleman, Mark Albrighton, Joe Bryan, Liam Rossini, Matt Bloomfield, Andrew Moran, Valerian Ishmael, Alfie May, Gary Rowett, Stuart Dallas, Reuben Colwell, and Aaron Ramsey propping up our table. Juliet Farrington is back. Charlie's lovely, isn't he, Jules?
Oh, he's great. I actually really think he'll do all right at Fleetwood. I know they're in that tricky position, but you could see just in their performance against Derby County that he's obviously changed things already. They are taking on board the messages that he's trying to put across. I think they'll be okay.
A new boss there, of course, at Fleetwood and Charlie Adam. Two new bosses go head-to-head in the Sky Bet Championship on Saturday at St Andrews. Birmingham, they've appointed tried, tested and very trusted Tony Mowbray. They take on a Swansea side with Luke Williams now at the helm. Luke, who did so much good work, of course, with Notts County. Birmingham first, Tony Mowbray in at Blues. Jules, what's your thoughts?
I think it's brilliant. I think it's a really good move. I think with Birmingham, the situation they find themselves in, the appointment with Wayne Rooney, I'm gutted for him. I'm gutted that he didn't get that time. He didn't get even get a transfer window. Football is brutal. We know that. We know what we're going into. I'd like to think that maybe they made promises to him that he couldn't deliver. But I'm disappointed he didn't get the time, because we don't know the conversations that take part when they have appointing in terms of a new manager or the conversations involved. But obviously it wasn't working for whatever reason. But then they bring in Tony Mowbray, safe pair of hands. He'll steady that ship, loves working with young players. He's got all that experience. He's got promotion experience. He's got title winning experience. It was a bit of it wasn't one that I thought would be appointed. I didn't really see his name linked with the job. But when you hear it and the appointment's been made and you hear it's Tony Mowbray, Birmingham City, and you think, yeah, I think that will work. Makes sense. It makes perfect sense.
The big thing came out of obviously Rooney's appointment was that no fear football, which was became a bit of an albatross that was hanging around his neck. But quote from Tony in his first interview, "I want my team to be full of energy, aggression, play on the front foot and dominate the ball," which is inherently what he did with Sunderland with that wonderful young team and got them into the playoff semi-finals. I mean, obviously, it's a bit of a leap to think that the Blues will be there come the end of the season, but widespread, and sometimes social media is not the greatest barometer, but there's not many Blues fans that I've read that have gone, "Ugh, Tony Mowbray." Everyone seems a bit like you, Jules, very kind of upbeat about the whole thing and the fact that it fits. And speaking of fits, if we look at Luke going into Swansea, this Swansea City way that Michael Duff inherited from Russell Martin, he's since moved on, of course. Alan Sheehan, a former teammate of mine who's done such a good job in kind of interim charge, paving the way for Luke to come in. Is it a case of Swansea City fans getting excited about what Swansea have been in the past and that could be now returning to that part of South Wales?
Well, I think so, because I also read the statement from Andy Coleman when Williams' appointment was confirmed. And he talked about aligning and finding a coach and leader who's aligned with the vision of the club. And I thought, the vision of the club. And when we've seen managers who've been at Swansea in the past and the free-flowing football that they've played and the youth and development that's also been a key part in what Swansea have done in the past in the Premier League and also in the Championship as well. And again, I was disappointed for Michael Duff because he was again given less than 5 months in charge to try and implement his own ideas. Maybe as far as that appointment was concerned, it didn't fit the fans. But I think with Luke Williams, I didn't realise that he was there as part of the coaching setup with Russell Martin. So he'll know about the club. He'll know about the philosophy. He'll know about what they want to do. And he would also have worked with some of those players during that time that are still there. And I think when you've been in a club and you know its identity and what they're about, you'd think that would be a success as well. He was a success at Notts County, and that's going to be a big miss as far as they're concerned. But I think you just know what he's going to bring to Swansea, and maybe the fans will connect with that better. And the players who were there before, if they believe in that person who is there, then they are going to perform to that level that manager wants.
Another new manager has swapped Saudi Arabia for the southwest of England. It's been described as the perfect candidate to take over from Plymouth Argyle, coming away from Stephen Gerrard at Al Ettifaq. Ian Foster, what do we know about Ian Foster? What's he going to bring? Where's he been? And what potentially do Argyle have on their hands?
Well, he's got a good contacts book, like Charlie Adam. he's worked with the FA and with the England, with some of the England groups as well, the age group. So you don't work for the FA if you're not a good coach. So he brings the knowledge, he brings the contacts book, and I guess it's another one in trying to develop the young players, which is what Plymouth have done so successfully. I know he follows in the footsteps of Ryan Lowe and Stephen Schumacher, a little bit of an unknown, but I guess that if you're looking to have that similar success with the book, the notebooks and the contacts that he's got, and he obviously is a very good coach and he's got the right people around him, you'd think that would work. I think it's because we don't really know that much about him that everyone's thinking, or supporters are thinking, okay, who's this guy? Mm-hmm. But he must be good. He must be good to have had the success that he's had so far working with England and the FA as well.
I think as well that there's a football club down there which is tremendously well run, and there's no rushing into this. There's no kind of grabbing at the first person that's available. They would have done their due diligence. And you're absolutely right, Jules, to reference what job Ryan Lowe did down there, what the job that Stephen Schumacher did as well. You get the feeling that Ian will just step in, and that progression, that gradual incremental improvement in what Plymouth Argyle are, it will carry on. Derby County, on the other hand, had to work hard for the 3 points. They've got some very, very good players, and all the stats point to, since October, how well they've done. It sounds a little bit backwards to say they've gone slightly under the radar, potentially off the back of that slow start to the season, but we are talking about one of the biggest clubs in League One. And for what you saw from them on Saturday up at the Northwest, are we looking at a team that should be quietly confident of being in the automatics coming into the season?
I think so. And I think so because of this phenomenal away record that they've had. The fact, when you look at it, they've picked 28 points up away from home on their travels, which has played obviously a huge part to where they are in the league table. But I also think you're right about them being under the radar. Maybe it's because of what's been going on there in recent seasons, you know, the financial issues, the points deduction, the change of manager. But that squad of players, they are a good group of players. And when you're coming up against Derby County, I think you do look at that and think, well, they do have one of the best squads. The players have stayed loyal. There's a good core that have stayed there and have been through. And maybe there's that, inside that group of players, it's like the want to desire to get back to where they feel that they belong. You've got James Collins, you know, who scored like so many goals. And I was speaking to him and Nathaniel Mendes-Lang, who's also scored against Fleetwood, had a chat with him. But I think now it's that you set the foundation, don't you, in the first half of the season, then you build on it for the second half to get you to where you want to be. So this incredible away record that they have, the setback against Peterborough on New Year's Day, they bounced back from that. They had to dig deep. Mm-hmm. But that just goes to show what, you know, they are. Maybe they weren't, you know, on the right song at Fleetwood. Maybe they didn't play to their finest tune. Mm-hmm. But if you can do that against teams at the bottom who are scrapping and find a way through and navigate them in front of 4,000 fans, they sold out their away allocation. Huge, a huge following that they have away from home. You think that, you know, that does stand them in good stead to push up into those automatic places.
You do right to reference Peterborough, because they are a team that are always an absolute bundle of fun to watch. The disappointment of the most ridiculous game in playoff history at the end of last season.
It was still a good game, though. It was a fantastic.
Oh, unbelievable.
I mean, it was incredible.
The look on Darren's face at the end of it spoke a thousand words. But given what he's seen from his side, because this is the thing, from Mason Clark, you've got Kwame Poku, Ricky J. I mean, there's so many players there that you rub your hands together going, oh, I'd love to watch them. They're a great attacking outlet, Johnson, Clark, Harris. But we are in January. We are in January, though, Jules. So does that mean that there's a case of the Peterborough look at January as just par for the course when you're developing good players? People are going to come in and start knocking on the door.
I always think of Crewe Alexandra back in the day when they were that club that developed good players, and they had promotions and they had relegations. They suffered, they celebrated because of it. And then, you know, the next one would come along and he would sign for a Premier League club. But that was the way that Crewe were. And I think that Peterborough with Darren Ferguson, it's like as if, I know he's been there a few times. He's gone and he's come back and he's gone and he's come back. But he just seems to be the right fit for that club. And I think after what happened against Sheffield Wednesday in that playoff, I think there had to be a bit of a reset and had to be a bit of a change. And they'd taken the holistic approach and they just seem to enjoy developing the younger players, giving them those chances. And that's why people like to watch Peterborough, because of the energy that it has. Will they get to the Championship this season? You don't know. But they've certainly put themselves definitely in a good position. And you say under the radar. They are under the radar.
I mean, there's three shrinking violets there. Barry Fry, Darren Ferguson, Darren McAntony as well. I mean, depending for the thoughts of those three, ought to be a fly on the wall. Let's just take a quick look at the bottom. Big win for Exeter. I mean, Carlisle, bless them, went all the way down there and came back completely empty-handed off the back of a 2-1 defeat. I mean, and even more pertinent for Exeter, given Cheltenham and the form that they're in, beating Pompey, league leaders, of course. Psychologically for Exeter, a big, big win, doesn't it? Because it has been, after a season that started so very brightly under Gary Caldwell, it's been attritional tough stuff.
Yeah, when you think that they were top of League One, was it back in September? Mm. And then they've been on, well, I wouldn't say free fall in the loosest of terms, but they have dropped right down. Mm. But then they've had a lot of setbacks, they've had a lot of injuries. It's a big transfer window for him. He's done it before, though. He's done it before. There's no reason why he can't do it again. I always think, though, when you speak to people like we have done today, Charlie Adam, people like Gary Caldwell, these were players who I used to interview on a regular basis. And then you always kind of keep your eye out for them if they get a job and you actually just want them to do well. I don't know whether, you know, they'll be up there by the end of the season, but it has been a tricky time. And you just, when you speak to them as players and then you just think how they deal with that as managers, like Charlie was saying, it's just, they just play the game, don't they? And now they have to come in.
And answer everybody's questions.
You're dealing with the groundsman, you're dealing with the staff, you're dealing with the chef, you're dealing with, and now you're dealing with a transfer window and you've got to get results as well.
It's a great little segue into challenges that managers face, because we go into SkyBet League 2 now and what... fans see. Well, they saw 15 minutes of Carl Robinson at Salford, didn't they?
Yeah, great debut that, wasn't it?
Again, another very big character, thoroughly experienced manager. And I'm sure we've both worked with Carl and got a lot of time for him because he's a wickedly funny fella. But it's one of those where you look at it and then you read it and you go, yeah, possibly not the greatest way to kind of say, hello, guys, I'm here to take the club forward.
Yeah, he said, hello, guys, I'm here to take the club forward for like 14 or 15 minutes. But then the team went on and got that point against Forest Green Rovers, which annoyed Troy Deeney so much and the manner in which they got that point right at the very end. So they played to the very end. They didn't sort of, they fought hard to get that point. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking of Carl Robinson, you know, he's another young manager. He's like 43, loves to win. Mm-hmm. He did really well at Oxford for a couple of seasons until, you know, things didn't quite work out in the end. With Salford, they just keep changing their managers quite a lot on a regular basis. It's like a revolving door. But I think with Carl, as you say, he's got that character. He's infectious. And I think the players will buy into that. Mm-hmm. I think he's infectious. He's a character. And he's very good at taking pressure off players and putting it on himself. And I think it's a really real opportunity now for Carl Robinson in his career to get back to what that we know he can do and that we've seen him do over the years.
Well, we have. I mean, that MK Dons side that he had was an absolute joy to watch. The other part of this equation that you've already mentioned is the name Troy Deeney. When you are there with the ability to speak to managers post-match and you're kind of thinking, I wonder what he's going to say. You've got yourself prepped. You've got your list of questions. And then a manager kind of just absolutely unloads on his players. What What is the kind of protocol from your point of view to sit there and enjoy it, sit there and make sure you get every single word coming out of his mouth?
I think that you'd think, okay, this is great. The news editors are going to love this. The headline makers are going to love this. Everyone is going to love this. But do you encourage more of it, or do you try and think, okay, let's breathe.
Temper it almost.
When you see the quotes, I always think spoken word is really different to written word. That's just the way it is. I think it looks worse than probably what it sounded like. But I think if you take the emotion out of it, Troy Deeney was clearly very upset. And if you're a player or a player's agent and you're reading what he said, if you're reading, this is it, if you're reading, it doesn't look good.
No.
But if you probably listen and try and put it into context and articulate it, he's a manager who has seen his team in a winning position, conceded late on, they've only picked up a point, they're fighting for their league lives. It's a difficult job, they haven't won games, and he's trying to make the best out of a bad situation that the club have found itself in.
The power of language. And speaking of standards and ramping them up, Jules, you've done exactly that on the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure. But you were telling me that there's no football for you this weekend. So what on earth does someone who spends a lifetime working in football do on a free weekend?
Do you know, that's the worst because, believe it or not, that is the worst. I don't really like shopping. And I don't really like shopping or getting dressed up to go shopping or even putting makeup on, to be honest. I just like putting a woolly hat on and just watching football and have a bovril or eat some sausage roll or whatever. So I find it really hard. I probably just go for a run or go on bike ride or the gym or I may even, drive, put myself in the car and just go through a Starbucks drive through on the M6 because it makes me feel like I'm actually doing something. But it's like anything, isn't it? If you've been doing something for most of your career and your life, if as a player or whatever, when it comes to Saturday, Carl Robinson was like the sort of things that he was doing. It's like it's those 2 hours on a Saturday traditionally between 3 and 5 that fills your time. So you do everything in the morning, then go and do watch football or go to work or work in it, and you get home late at night, and then it's sort of match of the day. It sounds really like a boring life that we lead.
It's a glorious thing
when you've done it for so long. When it's not there for that one weekend, it does feel weird.
You feel out of sorts, don't you? Looking around, is this what everyone else does on a Saturday? This is weird.
Does anyone else sit at home and watch Shrewsbury against Wrexham in the FA Cup with S4C and put in the local radio commentary on because you can understand what they're saying? Does anyone else do that? I don't know.
Hopefully there's people shouting at this going, no one does that. And I think that's you on your own there. But hey-ho, I'm all for the individual.
Shrewsbury's almost in Wales, so there you go.
A bit of geography to finish off. Jules, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome. See you soon.
So another pod bites the dust. A huge thank you to Charlie Adam, Juliet Farrington and Pete Wilde. As always, if you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@afl.com. That's podcast@afl.com. My name is David Prutton and I'll see you same time next week for another episode of the official EFL podcast.